that big deer who's hanging out here, like, you need to not listen to it.
Welcome back to another episode of Sterling Municipal Library's podcast, All Booked, where we talk to you about books we'd like to recommend.
And Jake is here to talk about Poor Deer, which, yes. Did that come out this year? It's a pretty recent release,
right? It came out in January of this year. Yeah, okay. So it's a super recent release, yes.
Oh, very exciting. So how about you tell us a little bit about it?
Okay, Poor Deer is the story of a girl named Margaret Murphy. Margaret, when she is 4 years old, she is playing with her friend Agnes Bickford, and they are the starter of the story is a huge bummer, just fair warning. They are playing a little like make-believe game that the two of them have come up with called a Waco Princess, and they Ruby like climbs into a cooler, they call it, like a freezer.
Oh, no.
Basically, yeah. And not Ruby, excuse me, that's her mother's name. Agnes climbs into a cooler. Margaret can't figure out how to undo the hasp on the cooler, and she's four. So she panics and she goes and hides under a table, and Agnes dies while she is inside the cooler. And that kind of like sets her off with sort of terrible. I mean, she doesn't understand at first exactly what's happened because she's very young. And what ends up happening as a result of that is that a sort of imaginary character enters her life. And that is, she overhears her mother talking about Ruby Bickford, Agnes's mother. And they're saying Poor Deer, and then that night a deer like visits her, and this deer sort of like, it is sort of her embodiment, the embodiment of her shame, basically. I mean, like, here, I actually marked in chapter 4 because I really like, if you don't mind my reading.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, let me see here. Poor Deer came to me when I was small and scared and alone and in need of hope, however fragile, that one day I would find a way to make up for what I'd done. Her hooves kick out at my shins. She nips and hurts. She clings and sighs. She demands justice. She never forgives. A tooth for a tooth and a claw for a claw, she always says. A life for a life, she always says. She leaves scat on the rugs and cries easily. She is my oldest friend. So it's like she's, and the way the story is built is she's trying, it's written as a confession, basically.
Okay.
She's always struggled with the reality of the situation because she told her mother, she was telling her mom, like, yeah, we were playing this game of Waco Princess. And then her mom realizes, basically, that she had done it. And her mom, like, slaps her and is like, don't you ever tell that story ever again. And she doesn't really and her mom tells her, like, that's a lie. Don't you ever say that story again. So she kind of struggles with exactly how culpable she is. And it's written as, like, a confession when she's, I think, around 16 or 17. But as she's writing the confession, Margaret always had a tendency to like go on these sort of flights of fancy. So she'll start writing it, and like instead of locking her in the cooler or something, she'll say, actually, we ran into the forest and then we met the Pirate King, and then we went and lived with the Pirate King for the rest of our lives. And then Poor Deer, her sort of imaginary friend, will interject and be like, you know, that's not how it happened. Like, tell it how it really happened. So there's always these moments in the story where like things start to like get happy and fantastical, and then you'll be like, just kidding, that's not how it actually happened. But the relationship gets with her mother gets really complicated because her mother is a widow, and you're not really sure, you know, that she loves Ruby, who is Agnes's mother, but you don't really know whether that's like platonic or somewhat sapphic or something.
Right.
But Ruby ends up moving away because she just like can't handle it. And so her mother, or Margaret's mother, blames her for basically her losing her best friend. And yeah, she has, it's tough. It's
yeah.
It's a very somber novel, but it's just like, it really hit. And it's very, because there are some of those like potentially queer readings that you can do for it. For me as a person, there's a lot of like religion running through the whole book, and like forgiveness is one of the huge themes for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it very much so hit me in that like recovering fundamental Protestant, like, mm-hmm. like I can't, like this shame beast, basically.
Plus, mm-hmm. I feel like it's also really exploring how much shame we put onto somebody at a very young age.
Yes,
like 4.
Yeah.
Can you really hold somebody accountable at that age? So
that they really can't control, too.
Right.
So like that's something that I was just like thinking through the entire time I was reading it and really relating to while I was reading the book. And yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like a pretty, it's a pretty small book. Like, yes. Not just short, but mm-hmm. also like the size of the book is very small. It's, yes. I'm assuming it's in our fiction section.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I always like when they play with the size of the book as well, because I feel like that can really make something stand out. And it's, so it's probably pretty short read, or yes. is it emotionally heavy enough that
I think so? I think I finished this in about 4 separate sittings.
Okay.
And I should say, like, yes, it's, the subject matter is like exceedingly sad, mm-hmm. but like every time I sat down with it, I like had at least one moment where I would well up, but I never fully wept.
Okay.
So like, because the thing, like, it's very much so drawing on like fabulous traditions mm-hmm. and like, and fairy tales and stuff. So all of that's like, and even in a lot of those fairy tales, there's like deep, heavy tragedy. Right. But it's treated with such a light touch, and it's so brisk that it's really hard to get too bogged down in a lot of the really awfulness that mm-hmm. that it could be.
And probably because it's going back between that kind of like fantastical like world that she's building mm-hmm. and then back and forth, like you're not dwelling, I'm assuming, in that feeling for too
yes.
long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How long, like, so it's when Margaret,
yes,
yeah, it's when she is 16. So at what point did Ruby move?
Ruby moves basically right like after. Immediately okay. after it happens. And then a bunch of other stuff happens in Margaret's life. Like, her mother is not really able to let go of the fact that she lost that friend. So her mother starts getting really embittered. She moves in with a rich man and basically moves away, and Margaret's Aunt Dolly starts caring for her. Margaret also meets a man who raises, I'm going to get the kind of bird wrong. It's basically like messenger birds, right?
Okay. Mm.
And it's sad, like it's interesting to see the world through her eyes too, because like she's overhearing conversations immediately after the tragedy, and like her Aunt Dolly, who was the nice person in her life, is like, she's in a better place, like, don't worry about it. And then she hears Ruby, who's, you know, grieving and like wild with grief, and is like, she's not in heaven, like, my daughter is not in heaven, she's in the ground. And so, but then Margaret is imagining, like, because they have a mole problem, so she's imagining that Agnes is like playing
in
with
the ground,
yeah,
like,
playing
yeah.
with moles in the ground. And so she talks to this guy who has the messenger pigeons, and she's like, will you send a message up to heaven for me? And he's like, sure. And then he does it, and then she's like waiting for months and months, and she's like, is that pigeon ever gonna get back? And he's like, you do know it's a story, right? And then like that's when she realizes like what death actually is, and that's done really well. And then like one of her flights of fancy later on in the novel is like that the guy with the pigeons like left her the house and all the birds, and then poor dear is like, that's not how it happened, he died when you were 8. Oh. So it's like there's but it sounds like I'm making it sound like such a huge bummer, like I'm telling you that most of this felt like in the introductory pages I was like, I feel like I'm reading a Wes Anderson novel or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of the images just felt very like, I don't know, those, like there's one scene I know where like the girls are talking to a teacher and they like nod together, and something about that just evoked those very strange like robotic movements or something. I don't know.
It's very like stylized.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was giving like kind of the Jojo Rabbit, like
a little bit.
Yeah. The kind of blurring the lines between reality and fantasy mm-hmm. because it's from a kid's perspective.
Yeah.
It sounds really interesting though, and very original mm-hmm. as far as like a look at like studying grief and shame, but like from the perspective of a child. I feel mm-hmm. like that's something that people, I think like they only focus on that, at least that I've seen, like in the children's section when they're like,
yeah.
you know, your pet died or your like a parent died. Mm-hmm. This feels like a very interesting way to talk about it, and also how much that can affect someone even if they don't understand what's happening.
Right.
Especially how important it is how the adults are handling mm-hmm. it, and if it's handled badly, it can affect someone for at least a decade before they write yeah. their confessional.
And I should say too, like by the end, because Poor Dear is there through the whole novel, you do get the idea, like Poor Dear doesn't go away, and there's no real moment where it like disappears and she like tells it off or anything like that. But like, I almost like it better because just like by the end, Poor Dear is like quieter, and she reaches a place where she's like, I might forgive myself. And Poor Dear is like, no, you won't ever. And she's like, I might. You don't know, you know, like she's not saying like,
yeah,
it's not necessarily it, because by the end too, there's Poor Dear makes a suggestion where you're like, whoa, you're sinister. Like, you're not, yeah. you're not necessarily like a good thing to have around all the time. And, but she like learns to live with it and to make its burden lighter, basically, which I think is just the most real thing for a fairy tale basically to do.
Yeah. Because the idea that like you write a confessional and then you're never going to feel bad about the thing that you've done again is pretty unrealistic. Whereas you write it all down, you get it all out, and then you can at least look at yourself and logically, as opposed to just being like believing the voice in your head.
Mm-hmm.
How long is it? I might.
It's 200. It's 225 pages.
Add that to my list.
No,
I will add it to mine too.
It's super brisk, and I know that you hear like awful thing happens to a child in the first chapter, and I know that's like a tough sell.
Yeah,
but it is like this book was very helpful to me, so I don't really like. I really, really enjoyed it, and like I said, like I welled up. But I never felt like I was never weeping, I promise.
I had very similar feelings about How High We Go in the Dark. Like one of the very first chapters, you're dealing with losing a child and stuff. And it hits heavy at the beginning, but then it starts to feel cathartic like the further you get into the read. So what type of reader would you recommend the book to?
Like the kinds of writers that this reminds me of are kind of like your George Saunders, Kelly Link, like all those people who are doing those kinds of books right now. This does feel a little more like linear and standard than those. It's not quite as like wildly magical realist or anything like that. It is mostly just like an imaginary friend, although there is a great moment where her Aunt Dolly gets concussed and like you're told that this is a real part of the narrative, and she's like, her Aunt Dolly, who's the one that loves her, is like, that big deer who's hanging out here, like, you need to not listen to it. Like, so she like you do kind of like, there is some buy-in from the world that she's got a deer who's talking to her. But yeah, I would say that if you're into that kind of, I mean, it's literary fiction.
Yeah.
So if that's not your cup of tea, then maybe don't. But also, it's an extremely quick read. So if you want like a quick feel, and it, honestly, feel good, I'll call it that.
Yeah.
Quick feel good read by the end. It's that's pretty good.
Yeah, because I feel like that's fair. Just the way that you described it, like, I don't think you've made it seem like too much of a bummer. I feel like you're making it seem like it's about the healing, not about the thing that happens.
Yes.
I also think just because it has that kind of fairy tale flavor, that it could be a good literary fiction pick for people who aren't normally literary fiction readers.
Yeah.
If they like relationships and if they like that kind of like fantastical element, and because it's short, it's probably a good entryway into literary fiction for people who don't normally read it.
And it doesn't sound overly cynical, which is one of my critiques of a lot of literary
fiction.
That
can be a hard part of literary fiction. You never know.
It is not, I would not say it's cynical like at all. I mean, like it acknowledges that life is difficult, but then the final message is definitely one of like hope, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, that's so exciting. And I had not heard of it at all. When I got put on there, I was like, oh, she spelled poor deer wrong. Nope, I looked it up. No, not in fact, it is deer, like the deer.
Yes, and a literal deer. Like I explain it to people and it's like, and it's a literal deer.
It's a deer.
So this is not the author's first work. Have you read her other?
I hadn't. This was like, I think a reviewer that I like for The New Yorker or something said that they really liked this book, and that's what made me pick it up. And also I really like the cover.
The cover is gorgeous.
Yeah. So, and also I was in such a book finishing rut. I've been reading plenty, but I've had a terrible time finishing things. Mm. And I was like, Jake, it's 220 pages. You can finish it.
You can do it.
So like I set this one aside and I was like, I can do it. And I'm very glad I did finish it. So
I think sometimes when you're having a problem with staying power with reading, it's just so good for you to get a shorter book.
Yes.
Because something about finishing it makes that part of your brain going, that's like, I'm not finishing any books. It's not working. Mm-hmm. You're like, I did it though. So shut up, brain.
And next I have The Fraud by Zadie Smith, which is like 450. And I'm like, all right, let's go for it.
Hey,
we can do it.
You worked your way up to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's like part one, part two of Poor Deer.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you so much for bringing us a fresh new title.
Yes.
And stay tuned next week for more fantastic book recommendations.
Bye.